Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I'm Martin, and I'm joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, the sooner that you introduce the guest, the sooner we can get to talking to her.
Oh.
So get to it.
Oh, I know. It's insane. I mean, the woman that we have on today, I mean, her name is ubiquitous, especially amongst our generation. But, I mean, she is a VJ, she is a playwright, she is a journalist, an author, like, songwriter, everything. She is Erica M. And Erica, we're so happy to have you on the show.
Welcome to my world.
I know you do a lot of talking as well. Like, so there's a lot of talking going on, and we appreciate that you're talking to us.
Yes, I am.
So now, one of the reasons that we're talking to you is, of course, the big digital series that you've got called Out of the Books. So why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, this is a show that I have been working on for the last year. It's a bit of a departure for me. It happened because someone that I knew who worked at the Jim Henson Company in L.A. had a friend who had written a whole bunch of pop songs, each song being a fairy tale. And he was looking for someone who can write a theatrical production, like musical theater, that would incorporate his songs into the show. And somehow, he picked me. So I was like, okay, sure, I can do that. And so we worked virtually because he was based in LA, and this was pre-COVID. And so we wrote a show, and it's a really cute show called Out of the Books, and it's for families, great music, cool characters, fun premise. It all happens in the land of Once Upon a Time. And then in our world, like real life, COVID hit, and our dreams blew up because we were supposed to premiere our show in Scotland at the Edinburgh Fringe Fest. And COVID said, no, you're not going anywhere. So we had to pivot, and we ended up recalibrating. And I rewrote the script into an 8-part YouTube series, which has recently launched on YouTube. And it's way better than the play because we were able to cast incredible actors. Two of the actors are from the Hamilton production in London. And we had fantastic actors from the UK and from the United States. And they all shot their parts against a green screen in their homes during lockdown. And we directed all of them using Zoom. And then everybody sent the footage to us, and it's being edited into this really cool new type of video.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I've watched the first couple of episodes, and it's really neat the way it's done. I certainly love the backgrounds and the art and just the look of it. So at what point did that kind of come up?
Well, that happened once we decided that we were going to do something in lockdown. We shot it, and then once we had the footage, we had to come up with, well, what does the world look like? Because when you're doing musical theater on a stage, that's very different than having to fill a screen. And Brian knows this amazing artist named Emily Woodward, and she did this fantastic artwork. And Brian's daughter, Charlotte, also helped out with a lot of the visuals, and he came up with this really cool idea. Because we were in lockdown and the actors were literally around the world, we couldn't very well just produce these unique fairy tale like costumes. So instead, we took t-shirts, each of them a different color, and Emily, the artist, drew the character from neck down. So the idea was, it's the actor's face and then the character on the t-shirt.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just so, it's really neat. And I do like the way that you know, I think that it speaks to kids, but it also speaks to them in such a way that it's intelligent speaking. And also the music is really good.
Yeah, Brian is super talented. He has been writing songs and composing in LA for literally decades. And I mean, he worked with Michael Jackson, hello, Giorgio Moroder. Like he is like seriously talented. And he also did all the jingles for Barbie and Bratz from in the U.S. So he knows how to write music that connects with kids. He's a perfectionist also. And he also, like I, did not want to dumb something down. In fact, it's the opposite. It's how do you create something for kids that parents will enjoy as well, that where they can sort of learn a thing or two or just get something that has a little bit of value, a little bit of ethics in there, a little bit of morality without being preachy. And I think we hit the right combination.
Do you think that one of the reasons that you were included then is because of the whole yummy mummy thing and the fact that when you became a parent, you just became, you know, you really pushed parenting, you know, to another level?
Yeah, I think that my involvement in the mom space certainly was an interesting part of it, combined with the fact that I wrote a kid's book called Mischievous Mom Goes to the Art Gallery. I also wrote the stage shows for two Caillou touring companies and one Big Comfy Couch, which were big hits for kids probably about 20 years ago or so. And I'm a songwriter. So I think that there's a whole bunch of different qualities that I have that together gave me the skills to write a show that is sort of like a jukebox musical, right? Like kind of like, you know, the Mamma Mia show.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same idea, which is here's a bunch of songs. I need you to write a show around the songs. How do you make those songs make sense in the context of a show? And so I'm good at inventing things and solving problems and telling stories. And that's what I did.
Would you consider musical theater to be your first love?
Yeah, I think I, from a very young age, I wanted to be an actor, but I can't sing. I have no relative pitch, sadly. and I'm not good at playing somebody else. So, but I'm good at being the boss. So I used to direct imaginary actors in my basement when I was young. And as I got older, I directed the school play when I was growing up in Hudson, Quebec. But being a performer was not my calling. But being able to invent a world and tell the stories, that to me is really exciting.
The storytelling aspect of writing songs, is that something you think is perhaps not as appreciated as it should be?
I love songs that have great words. Today I was just asked to play some songs on a radio show, and one of the songs that I chose was Canaan. I forget what it's called now. God, just a little bit, I think. I mean, this guy is he's a spoken word poet, like Shane Coyson. These guys, they know how to use words to almost as music in and of itself. They're poetry, it's spoken word, and I love that. And I'm attracted to artists, songwriters who use words in a powerful way, kind of like Sting or Don Henley, Lyle Lovett, all those sort of, I guess you'd call them singer-songwriters. Those are the people that I tend to listen to. And modern day, I think Scott Helman is that. He's such a good songwriter, and he just has he has an ear for words, for the sound of words.
Do you follow the current music scene, both the industry as well as the music part, very closely now still?
Not really. I mean, I have two kids. My son, Josh, is 20, and my daughter, Jessie's 16. And they're obviously more in tune with music that's going on today. So they play me music all the time. And my son, Josh, is obsessed with hip hop. So he's been playing hip hop for me for the last probably 3 years and telling me stories and why it's good and all the different artists and what he doesn't like. And he gets me to hear things in a different way. So I'm really grateful for my kids because they're not keeping me young, but at least helping me understand the current culture, because I'm old now. It, you know, pop music pop music is made for young people. It's not made for older people. It doesn't speak to me because, you know, lyrics usually reflect your state of mind. And pop culture is usually for a young person's state of mind. And I have no problem with that. So it's really great for me to hear the world and see the world through their ears and eyes.
Yeah, I could use that, to be honest with you. I'm also old.
Definitely.
Well,
you are.
The problem is that much music back in the day was, we were cultural curators. So all the music was delivered to us, and then we sort of went through it all and then picked our favorites and played a whole bunch of amazing music. And so people across the country knew where to go to get all their music fix. Today, it's so splintered that there is no one place where kids can find their music. Like my kids, they don't know where to get new music. I don't even know. They don't even know where they find it. My daughter listens to Spotify and sometimes they feed her songs and then she'll just flag them and they become part of her playlist. But there's no one really helping her find cool music.
No, that's actually something that that I miss. You know, the much music playing, well, music.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, things have to evolve and change, and it's understandable. But you know, I mean, it's not the way it was, you know, when I was growing up. But every day, that was the after school, that was the ritual. Immediately, much music. See what's happening.
Yeah. It's interesting now that with my pod, you know, I have a podcast, right?
That's right, yeah, for sure.
Reinvention of the VJ. So I've been interviewing, obviously, all the on-air hosts from back in the day. And that's the one thing that we all talk about is this lack of a Canadian curator this for our culture, that it's so splintered that there is no one voice anymore. I guess CBC would be it to some degree, but it's nowhere cool enough, and not as sort of down to earth, and it doesn't have that same sort of sense of eclectic characters and personalities that reflected the audience. So yeah, that's one thing that each of us laments, because that's what drew us to the job, which was being the voice of culture for Canada.
What is your proudest professional accomplishment at Much Music, as well as your proudest professional accomplishment since leaving?
I think it's the ability to reinvent and make so many eclectic projects come to life. So I've done many different things in my career to date, and I'm happy to say that I can no longer be pigeonholed. So that, you know, what is she? Is she an entrepreneur? Well, she runs a business and it's very successful. Well, is she a writer? Well, she's had a few books. I guess so. Is she a songwriter? Well, she's won a bunch of awards, but I don't know. Is she a playwright? Well, she does have this show. Like, it's hard to pin me down. And I think that is my greatest achievement.
So then I guess the question is that when you were Erica M starting out on Much Music, would you have ever envisioned this for yourself?
Oh, God, no. And I just look right in front of me and do what I love to do. I don't have a grand plan. And all I knew is that at that point, when I was at Much Music, I was right where I wanted to be, which was where the music was happening and where all the artists were and where I could, you know, be a role model for girls and a fashion icon and a positive voice for young people. And then when it ended, I just went on to the next thing. But I always had a lot of, I guess you'd call it like seeds that were being planted. So while I was working at Much Music, I already had started writing songs and had started a record label. And while I was at Much Music, I already was doing voiceovers and writing a book. And, you know, so I was already doing many different things while I was at Much Music, because I knew that it would eventually end. You only could be somewhere for so long. And by the time I left, I was 34. I was done. I was tired of interviewing bands, many of whom had nothing to say. I wanted to learn different things. And so I did.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to learn, and I think it's really fascinating when you do think about Much Music and the whole music thing. Like, where did your passion for music come from?
I think most teenagers love music. My uncle he ran a children's summer camp with my mom, and music was a big part of the teen culture there that I grew up in. So I guess, and my parents used to drive around listening to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Joni Mitchell and various other Carole King style artists on their 8-track in our car. So I was always hearing sort of at that time modern pop music, and I don't know, I just loved it.
There's always it seems like, at least, you know, when you get to a work environment that's seems to have a family atmosphere, there's always one person who's the wittiest and one person who's the coolest and one person who's the, you know, the confidant. So what is your role in a work environment? You're the one person who's the what?
Leader?
Yeah.
I'm the earnest leader. And when I say leader, it doesn't mean that I am the boss. It means I am the one to bring people together and get everybody's voices heard.
Interesting. Which role do you wish you could play that you don't play?
The millionaire.
I understand that. Me too.
I'm an entrepreneur. So, you know, I don't work for money. I work to create. And, you know, money would be really, really awesome.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm much more about my passions than I am about money. But boy, it'd be nice to get rich doing it too.
Exactly. Exactly.
One of the things I'm kind of interested in is that earlier, you know, you talked about the new music and stuff coming out. And so when you talk about your kids and them on playlists and then going back, now I know that for both Mont and I, listening to albums was so important, but I mean, you heard the singles on Much Music. So where do you stand on that, like albums versus singles, and now how music has really gone towards almost exclusively singles?
Well, it's terrible. I mean, it's the state of music now is in shambles because I feel like there is no more attention to an entire album. I mean, artists would write an album that was themed and then they would put it out so that there was a rhythm to the songs and often a theme to the whole album. And you don't get that anymore. And I think that it's hard for fans to become devoted to musicians when they're just getting sort of a superficial taste of them, as opposed to a rich understanding of their musical vision. So I guess that what happens then is that you have less loyal fans because there's no real depth, there's no real connection. So I really think the music industry is in crisis right now.
You know, it's very interesting because you had mentioned, you know, that many of the bands you spoke to, they didn't have anything to say. And yet, you know, you're talking about the music industry being the shambles now. I mean, I know from our experience doing this, and we've done a couple hundred, you know, interviews, we've very rarely run into an artist without something to say. But do you think that there's something aligned with the idea that the artist has something to say and making a fully great album?
Well, I think yes, because they may not have something to say lyrically, they may have something to say musically. So for me, lyrics happen to be where I'm most attracted. But for example, Crowded House didn't have a lot to say, but their music spoke to me. Mm. It entertained me and it made me feel alive, I guess, happy, took me away somewhere. And listening to their entire album did that as well. And I think that I'm going to disagree because I think that there are many artists, I guess you'd use the word, but I use it loosely, who just really want to be famous.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put together a band and they made music and they were assholes. Mm-hmm. And they just wanted the fame. And to me, anyone who was sort of
superficial,
rude, is not an artist. And they don't really deserve my time. And I don't fault them. They can be like, if what attracts you to the music industry is fame, all the power to you. But I don't want to waste my time talking to people like that.
Guess he probably ran into that a lot.
Well, sure. You know, there's a joker in every crowd, and that's fine. But it's a waste of my time.
Interesting. Was one time that the cameras weren't rolling that you wish they were?
Oh, I have one story that there are many times that I've, you know, hung out with bands after. And like when Nick from Crowded House came to my house and he did his laundry and it was so much fun. But the one time was when I was interviewing Sting, and it was backstage at, I think it was the Sky Dome, when Sky Dome had just opened. And we had, it wasn't a live interview. It was a what is it called? A two camera shoot, an ENG shoot. And so we did this long interview, and then right at the end of it, he looks at me and he says, "You're very lovely." No, sorry, I lied. He goes, "You're very beautiful." And I turned around. My cameraman was Dave. I said, "Did you get that?"
There must have also been a time that's the opposite, that you wish the cameras weren't running.
Yeah, many times. I mean, we were live, so whatever happened. But that was part of the magic of it, was that you saw us. You saw real people. And you can't have the good without the bad sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think endeared us to the audience, where we weren't superficial. We were real people.
What's one place you got to visit that you wish you could go back to?
Got lots of I scored the good show. I put my hand up for a show called Clip Trip. And Clip Trip was, the music I didn't necessarily love. It was international music, but we had to go travel around the world to explore that music. So I was in Switzerland for, I think, a week, capturing the music of Switzerland. I was in Israel for at least a week, capturing the music of Israel. Spain, the same thing. Newfoundland for a while to capture all the Celtic and kitchen party scene. So, oh my God, I've visited so many different places. I would, at this point, go freaking anywhere. lockdown.
Well, yeah, that's totally fair. I think everybody would now.
I understand that feeling, absolutely.
One of the things that I'm really interested in is, like, you talk about the whole live mentality and being live on Much Music. How did that lesson kind of impact your life as a creator later, as an entrepreneur, as a creator, and as a mother, really?
What I learned is that people forgive your mistakes if you just carry on. So it's incredibly useful when you're making a presentation in business or talking to a live group, because I do, or used to do until there was lockdown, a lot of public speaking and motivational speaking, et cetera. And I would make mistakes when I would be talking. And if you know how to just move on and not let on that you just flubbed, people don't even notice, and they forgive you. And I think a lot of people get caught up when they make a mistake, and then they sort of turn red in the face, and then they go, "Oh, sorry, sorry, sorry." And suddenly you're pointing at the mistake,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just moving on and gliding past like Teflon Erica. So I think that was the best lesson I learned, is everybody makes mistakes, just move on.
How long did it take you to learn that lesson? I mean, that sounds like for live TV. you know, just about the most important thing you could learn?
I probably learned it quite quickly. I had to. I mean, we were live every day, almost 7 days a week for 4 hours live every day with no script. You got to learn that quite quickly.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I know that we're about to run out of our time with you. One of the things that I wanted to ask is, I mean, how well is Out of the Books doing? And also, like, would you consider a sequel now?
So Out of the Books is just launching. Like, you're basically one of the first people to talk about it. So
okay.
People haven't discovered it yet. So any help that you can give us to let people know about it would be amazing, because I think it's a little diamond in the rough. In terms of doing a sequel, the idea behind the show is, in fact, we wrote it as a prequel to what is the Out of the Books band. So we're hoping that if there's enough interest from families, from kids and their parents, we will create a whole series based around these characters who help kids and families and solve problems using music and fairy tales.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll tell you right now, I have certainly been forwarding it off to everybody that I know with kids that I think would be interested. So because I think it's just so much fun.
Thank you.
And we want to give you a chance to, you know, promote exactly where everybody can keep up with you, and every project you have going on. Here's your chance. Go ahead and plug everything.
Well, Out of the Books is on YouTube. And it would be great if you subscribe. So we have a few episodes are dropped. It's going to go to 8 episodes. So if you subscribe, you'll know when each episode gets dropped. So it's Out of the Books, O-U-T-T-A. We're kind of cool. Out of the Books.
It's hip.
And my podcast is called Reinvention of the VJ. And it's already the number 2 most listened to podcast in the arts category in Canada. And what's really special about that is that most of the podcasts in this category are not Canadian, but our podcast is by Canadians about the Canadian experience, about the experience of what it was like to work at Much Music and how that experience affected all of our lives. And when I say all of our lives, I mean the people who were on air on Much Music and then all of the fans who grew up watching Much Music and how it changed Canadian culture. And on top of that, the reinvention of the VJ show is really about how do we reinvent? How, like, each of us were stars on Much Music and then we left. So all of us have had to reinvent. And it's that process that really interests me.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed the podcast. It's, you know, great to get the inside stories. One final question for you from myself is, you've interviewed hundreds of people, so let us know, how did we do?
I would say you get a 10 out of 10. Oh. Really good questions, and you listen to my answers, which is unusual.
Well, thanks a lot.
We've done a couple hundred of these ourselves.
That's right. We try.
We're fair at it.
Really good.
Well, Erica,
thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, you're a favorite of ours. We grew up watching you on Much Music, and so it's been a treat and an honor. And we wish you nothing but the best in the future and look forward to talking to you again.
And I really hope that I really hope your reinvention of the VJ sometime you do answer fan questions episode with one or two of the VJs, because I know
that. Oh, we do that all the time. And there's a phone number that you can call. Guys, you can do it. You can call and you could promote your podcast. And I think the number is 833-972-7272. So you can call up and be on my show.
Okay. Well, let's do that.
All right.
I dropped the gauntlet.
Yeah, okay. We will pick it up. Thanks a lot, Erica.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a great day.
From the very day I hatched, I was told that I'd a match. It would take an age for me to get where I am now. The other ducks, they hated me, shouted loud I was a freak. All I ever wanted was to fit into a crowd. couldn't deal with life behind these gates. Ostracized, they made me run away. Why should I take another day? It seemed there always was somebody who didn't understand what life looked like for me. They chased me and they shamed me. Why can't they treat me like a brother? 'Cause you can't judge a book by its cover. Over the fence I found some ducks. Said I could stay, but you're not one of us. They made me feel like I was beneath them. So I set out to leave. Met some ganders in the reeds. They seemed really nice to me. Said I should fly away with them to meet some girls. Before I knew that they were using me, a hunter's shot, bang, bang, go, oh, what a scene. So I hid till I could leave. Still out looking for somebody who understands what life is like for me. Won't suppress me or mess with me. When will I find someone who's learned that you can't judge? Spring came and I was swimming free, still alone, not happy. I found these swans and I was drawn to them, 'cause I was so in awe. Just an ugly duckling who next to gorgeous swans. But they surprised me and pointed to the pond. Looking down, I see a beauty that transcends. Not an ugly duckling, I have always been misread. I'm a regal swan instead. I always knew I was somebody who has so much to give but never got the chance. But when they shamed me, they made me. By its cover.